Welcome to Classical 95.9 WCRI's Conducting Conversations with your host, Mike Maino. 1 hour of music and conversation with notable people in the arts, bringing you the stories of how music has impacted their lives. The show will give a behind-the-scenes look at the guest's background, interests, or special project.
Conducting Conversations is brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, from sheet music and brand name instruments to rentals, repairs, lessons, and more. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.
And now here's your host, Mike Maino.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conducting Conversations. Tonight we have a very special show featuring the famous and talented Bill Haney is here from Theater by the Sea, and he's brought a kind of unique individual with him, one that a lot of people have been waiting to hear from, the star of My Fair Lady, currently playing at Theater by the Sea. Charles Shaughnessy is here. Welcome, Charles.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you here in our studios in beautiful downtown Exeter, Rhode Island. And Bill, welcome back to you.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be back.
We're a little off schedule here because normally when we have a show with Bill and Theater by the Sea stars, it's the week before the opening. But now you've had a couple weeks of a great, great run, sold-out performances, audiences going crazy, tearing at your clothes, and that's the way it is here in Rhode Island, Charles.
They're an excitable bunch. It's
been great. I had the privilege of being at opening night a couple weeks ago, and the audience went crazy when you went on the stage, and rightfully so. We're going to have an opportunity to talk to Charles today, find out a lot about his background and stories. But I just want to start with Bill and congratulating you on another successful, extremely successful beginning of the season. We're halfway through already almost.
Absolutely. We've got another week or so. I think it ends Sunday. And I will just say that this show has broken the records. We thought we did last year with Mary Poppins, but this show has hit the record breaker.
And it just seems to keep going. The hits keep coming.
Absolutely.
Right?
This was really one of the productions I can't be more proud of.
Go ahead, Bill.
No, when I asked Charlie a year or two ago, would he come to Theater by the Sea, and he did this for us at North Shore, and it was amazing. And I never thought he would agree to come to little iconic Theater by the Sea in Matunuck, Rhode Island, but he did, and I am so happy, and most importantly, 500 people a night are really happy.
Right. Well, he didn't know the details when you asked
him. I didn't tell him there was no AC.
The AC he kept very quiet about. I had to discover that from other people. Oh, you're going to Theater by the Sea? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great.
And he still came, and he still...
Drink a lot of water, they
said. So far, he's still on the show. He hasn't left us yet.
That's right. Well, you're two-thirds of the way done now.
You're almost done. And I have to say, I wouldn't have missed this experience for the world. I mean, it's such an iconic place. I mean, I'd heard about Theater by the Sea, and I'd heard about doing theater in a barn, and it really is doing theater in a barn, and it's utterly charming. Everything about it is charming. Everything about it is a throwback to the days of golden days of Summerstock. But the show doesn't suffer at all. It's still a terrific show. I mean, the production is a no holds barred production in this really charming environment. So, what's not to love about it?
It is. It's a great environment for the four people that are left in the state that haven't been to Theater by the Sea yet. You should get down there. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful opportunity to see up close and personal one of the greatest stars we've had in the state in a while, so it's nice to have you here, Charles.
Thank you.
Let's go back and tell some of the audience, remind them. They're going, Charles Shaughnessy, I remember him from The Nanny, of course, right, on television, which was probably the way most people would relate to you, I would think.
It's either that or Days of Our Lives. It sometimes goes back further to Days of Our Lives when, the golden age of the soaps. I was on one of the NBC soaps for 8 years on Days, all through the 80s. So it's a very clear definition. There's the Nanny fans and there's the Days fans, and they will sometimes get into it. He's from the Nanny. No, he's not. He's Days of Our Lives. It's Shane Don. No, it's Mr. Sheffield. One or the other of those two. And then the younger ones, sometimes there's a Disney Channel movie fan. If they're around 17, 18 years old, it's Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire.
Well, you've done a couple Disney things.
Yeah, right? That was quite a hit one. That was the vampire one was fun because it was vampires, you know, right, Disney vampires, right, and that. And so there's a certain little demographic that remember me from that.
Now, I would think that a lot of the people that would remember you from either The Nanny or Days of Our Lives, for example, I'm a nanny guy because, like a lot of males that are working, particularly back 30 years ago, the women were watching perhaps the daytime television, and right, the guys are watching the night television. So right, I'm sure that's part of it, too.
Right, and Fran Drescher's outfits didn't hurt either.
Well, that's why the guys watched them. There you go. And I've got to say, when you made your entrance at opening night, there was a woman behind me that I thought I was going to have to assist with some, you know, helping her breathe because she was all verklempt. And so that's an interesting thing. Yeah. Can you speak to that for a moment?
You know, it never becomes normal. I find, you know, coming from England, the English are much more reserved, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. So when I came out here in 83 and quite quickly got onto the soap after about a year, I found myself on a soap and became a part of a super couple. And so the fan experience was really new to me. And it's very gratifying in some ways, but it becomes sort of out of proportion with the work you're doing. You know what I mean?
It's like, right.
You know, you're an actor doing a job and suddenly you're this other thing that creates, you know, that kind of havoc with people losing their breath.
There were four other English guys that came here one time had that kind of reaction.
Yeah, that's true. Right? They had the same. So, but it's very gratifying, and especially when people genuinely enjoy the work you do, you know, how can you not be gratified by it?
Well, I think that's an important point. You're not just a pretty face, right?
Hopefully not. No, it's nice to be that.
I'm the pretty face. Remember that.
That's right. It's what I've seen of you on television, and certainly what I saw last week at Theater by the Sea. The work is extraordinary, and that's obviously the most important part of it. We want to find out a little bit about your background. Bill, if you don't mind, we're not going to talk to you very much today.
I'm enjoying listening to this. I'm serious.
But we're gonna have to take this opportunity to talk with Charles and find out a little bit about how this all started. Your mother and father were both in show business, right?
That's right. My mom was an actress. She kind of gave up when we were young. My brother and I were young, and she sort of her work took a back seat to bring up the kids. But my dad was a writer, so was always in and out of work. And so I got to see how the business worked. Most of their friends were in showbiz. So I saw the ups and the downs of it. And then my brother went into the business. So I was heading that way because I'd always acted at school. And I suddenly put the brakes on, threw a flag on the play and went, wait, we can't all be penniless actors, you know, showbiz, you know, gypsies. So I went to university and read law. I studied law for 3 years at Cambridge, got a law degree, and then very quickly realized that this was just not my calling. I was never going to be a lawyer. Right. And went into the family business a little later than everyone else. And never regretted it. You know, I got to play a lawyer on TV instead, you know. And it's been very good to me. I've been very, very fortunate. It's been a very fortunate career and life. I've done everything that I wanted to do in all kinds of different areas of the business. So no regrets at all.
That's great. And now Theater by the Sea.
And now Theater by the Sea.
Hit the top.
Yeah.
Today we're going to play some music from My Fair Lady, which is going to be playing just Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I believe. I think that's the amount of shows that are left. And so I would encourage you to buy tickets, except there aren't a whole lot left.
That's the really good news. But there are always seats left. We want to make sure everybody can get to see this show.
A few here and there.
Yeah,
and,
it's important to see. This is such a great show. You can't miss it. So next time, get tickets earlier.
Right, you got to get tickets earlier. And the theater has two more productions after My Fair Lady, Bill, right?
We have Disney's Little Mermaid coming in, and then following and finishing the season, Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. We've got two more very different shows, but fun.
Yeah, I might come back and see Young Frankenstein.
Love it.
I've never seen Young Frankenstein on stage.
That iconic movie, and it's a lot of fun music.
Yeah. Putting on the Ritz, that's my favorite bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. So that should be a lot of fun, and we're going to see you right back again next week, Bill, with the star of Little Mermaid. So
yes,
that'll be fun.
Yes, I am bringing her in. Absolutely.
We're gonna have two weeks in a row. We'll be doing this.
I can finally get here now. I know the way to get to this place.
after all these years,
after all these years.
After all these years of coming with other people. Let's get to a piece of music from the show, and we're going to start off with Wouldn't It Be Lovely, right? And this is towards the beginning of the program, right?
This is the introduction of Eliza Doolittle as the flower girl in Covent Garden. She's singing about the life that she would like to have.
All right. We will listen to that, then take a short break and be back with more of Theater by the Sea, and specifically Charles Shaughnessy.
It's rather dull in town, I think I'll take me to Paris. The missus wants to open up the castle in Capri.
Me doctor recommends a quiet summer by the sea.
Welcome back. I'm Mike Maino, and we are sitting with Bill Haney from Theater by the Sea and the star of My Fair Lady, Charles Shaughnessy. And Charles, you know, during the commercial break, you and Bill started talking about some very interesting things that I think that the audience might like to hear. We touched on the fact you went to school and were going to be a lawyer.
Right.
Never practiced, though, right?
I never practiced. I got my degree. A friend of mine, we were talking in high school about what to do with our lives. And he said, you know, how do you know what you're going to want to do? But what I do know is the kind of people I want to be around. So he said, if I can identify who I want to be working around, it'll help me discover where I want to be. And I took that advice later on and looked around at lawyers, and a lot of my friends were going on to be lawyers. And much as they were friends and I liked them, they weren't my people. It wasn't my tribe. And I realized, no, showbiz was my tribe, that my parents' friends that I would see at the house, those are the people I felt comfortable with. So I'd always been acting. I loved acting, but right. Did I want to be an actor? That's a different thing. Mm-hmm. And I realized, yes, I did. I want to be part of that gang. So I went back to school, went to drama school, and then got into weekly repertory theater, which in those days, every town had a theater. And you spent all year doing plays. So you'd be rehearsing one play during the day and then doing another at night. And you'd do sort of 10 plays in a season, playing all kinds of different roles. And it was the best training. You worked with some fantastic actors. You know, you started at the bottom and sort of worked your way up through the ranks. And as a sort of young juve, you'd maybe play the young lead in something and then be back in the chorus of the pantomime, you know, the next week. So that was the training I got, and I loved it. And it was, you know, from then, no looking back.
Was it pretty easy for you to envision the fact that you'd be here today? I mean, you know, still doing the...
Not in a million years. I mean, I had no intention of leaving England. It never occurred to me to live anywhere else. I just happened to meet this American girl who was studying at drama school a year below me. She came from Los Angeles to study for 3 years in London. And we started dating and fell in love. And then I went to work in England. She came back to Los Angeles to work. We kept in touch. And finally, I just thought, this is crazy. I'm wandering around with my, you know, missing a limb. You know, we had become very close to each other. So I called up from a phone box.
Were you walking down the street where she lived?
I almost was. I was actually at Liverpool Street Station, which was a station that we used to use, and it was pouring with rain. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. I found a phone box, and because of the time difference, and I called up, which was, I guess, early in their morning, and proposed over the phone.
Wow.
And she said yes, and I thought, I think I should ask your dad. And she said, whatever for? I said, well, I think that's what you do. So I got hold of her dad, who just started laughing, couldn't believe that I was asking his permission to marry. He said, oh, marry, take it, please. And that was it. So I came out here in 1983. We got married and started our life in America, and it never occurred to me I'd live anywhere else. And certainly I didn't even know the soaps existed. So when that all happened, and as we said earlier, that was a sort of, my life took a whole different turn. So no, it's all been an extraordinary adventure.
Now, the time period from coming here, being married, and then getting on the soaps, what was that? What do you think
got
you into it?
That was all kinds of weird and wonderful jobs. I spent time selling adult videos on the telephone around the country. I had a stack of phone books, and I'd look up sort of sleazy motels and just cold call and try and sell them Debbie Does Dallas or Swedish Erotica, volumes 1 through 6. And I thought with this accent, I would have a, you know, quite a success, but it just freaked everyone out, you know. They thought they were talking to Prince Charles and hung up. So I wasn't very good at that. Then I was a private detective for a day. A friend of mine was a private eye, and I assisted them for a day. And that was just, that completely freaked me out. I bumped into some very strange characters there.
In one day.
And I was a chauffeur for Tina Brown, who at the time I think was Tatler. And then she came over here to run Vanity Fair for a while. So I did all kinds of weird and wonderful jobs, and then gradually started getting work as an actor, you know, slowly but surely starting to work.
And what was the break that got you on to Days?
The break was I went for an audition for a week on General Hospital, and I got the job as Holly Scorpio's cousin. And that sort of was a week and sort of put me in front of certain people. And then shortly after that, an audition for Days and a character called McShane Mystery Man. That was the only name of the character, McShane Mystery Man. And he was this extremely nasty, sadistic guy who had kidnapped Hope Brady, who was the heroine, and was terrorizing her in a basement. They had lines like, you know, I'm gonna make you tell me where your boyfriend is, Hope Brady. And I thought, oh, I'll go in the audition, I'll wear a leather jacket, I'll put on this Cockney accent, be really tough. So I did the audition, and my agent called and said, you've got the job. They're sending you a script. There's just been a few changes. So I get the script, and I'm looking for McShane Mystery Man, and there's no character, McShane Mystery Man. But there is this character, Shane, but he's not a tough Cockney bloke. He's a butler. So instead of having the line, you watch it, Hope Brady, or I'm going to mess you up, my line is, would you like me to serve the refreshments on the patio, madam? I said, seriously? I auditioned with that, and this is the job? But it started as a two-day job, just this enigmatic butler who turned in to be a spy, and it sort of lasted for 8 years. It was meant to be 2 days and became 8 years. And they gradually, this butler became more and more enigmatic until it turns out he's actually a super secret agent. And off went Shane Donovan.
There you go.
There you go.
We could have the next James Bond here with that background.
Yeah, I love it. Like James Bond light. He belonged to the ISA, which was the International Secret Agency. Or thing. We always called it the International Stupid Agency because he wasn't able to actually pull off any coup. I mean, I think he's still out there in Europe somewhere, 30 years later, trying to find the big bad guy. Not a very successful agent.
So then from there, the nanny occurs.
And then the nanny came out of the blue. I did, you know, this is an actor's life is 95% luck. It's like lightning having to strike. You know, it really is. It's like you go to take a lottery ticket. And I happened to do a guest role on a Murphy Brown that was a CBS show. And the story behind getting that was extraordinary because
she was a lawyer, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. But I wasn't going to go on a general meeting with the casting director because it was miles away in rush hour traffic. And I said to my manager, it's just a general. It's not to read for anything. It's just to say hello. And she said, no, you know, you should do that. They don't know who you are. You've just come off the soap. You should meet her. So I did. And as I was leaving the office, she said, oh, would you mind coming back tomorrow? Because we're seeing some people. The producers are meeting some people, two actors for next week's show. But I think that they should see you. So I went back the next day. And lo and behold, I got this job on Murphy Brown. It was a CBS show. And then a year later, when the nanny came up, the head of CBS remembered me from that. And said, this is the guy that should be Maxwell Sheffield. You can read as many people as you want. You can meet as many people as you want. But this is the guy that I'm going to approve. And I didn't know that until later. So that Murphy Brown really was responsible for me getting the nanny. So you never know when those opportunities are going to come. That's why I always believe as an actor, you do just about everything that's in front of you. Mm-hmm. Because it may not look like much. It may just look like a one-week guest role, but it can turn your life around. So,
and you never know who's listening or what
you never
thinking.
Know who's listening, who's right. in. You never know where it's going to work, and it's all work. You know, it's all fun.
Okay, well, let's get back to My Fair Lady, a little segue here, and talk about the show just briefly. How long, or when was your first time playing this role?
You know, this was the first, I was never the musical guy at drama. I was the least likely to be in a musical. My wife, who is a musical actress, it's like a big joke to her that I'm the guy that's actually doing musicals. And the first one was at the CLO in Pittsburgh doing Henry Higgins. Huh. And it came out of the blue, and I remember being completely terrified, especially at the CLO, as you may know. They have like this insane rehearsal period, yeah. Like you do it in 7 days. Yeah. But it got me going. I got the bug, and I loved playing Henry Higgins, and I wanted to do it again and again and again to get it, you know, different and better and better. So that was the first time. Then, as Bill said, in North Shore a few years back, mm-hmm. And now at Theatre by the Sea, and it's different every time. You know, it's such a complex, rich show that it's a completely different play every time. And especially depending on the Eliza, you know, we have Kerry Conti, yeah. who's just so wonderful and different from the other two that I've worked with. And in some many ways, I think we're telling the story, more honestly than I, for me anyway, than ever before.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's get to a song from that, and then we'll take a break and come back and talk more about the show itself. This is one of the iconic tunes from the show, "The Rain in Spain."
Yeah.
Falls mainly on the plain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
What was that?
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it. I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
By George, she's got it. By George, she's got it. Now, once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that soggy plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
In Hartford, Hereford, and Hampshire,
hurricanes hardly happen. How kind of you to let me come.
Now once again, where does it rain?
On the plain, on the plain.
And where's that blasted plain?
In Spain, in Spain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain. The rain in Spain stays mainly.
Welcome back to Conducting Conversations. I'm Mike Maino. We're sitting with Bill Haney from Theater by the Sea and Charles Shaughnessy, who is currently starring in My Fair Lady. Just a few days left to catch Charles before he goes on to his next thing. And your next thing has been pretty consistent lately between New York and things going on.
It's been a busy summer.
It's been a busy summer.
And it doesn't stop there. I go back for a very short time, and then my wife, who's an actress, still now getting back into acting.
We got to ask a question here. Is this the same?
The same delightful girl. This is Susan from Central School, and we've been married now 32, going on 33 years.
Wow, now that's
two lovely daughters,
story.
And we're going to be working together for the first time professionally in Harvey. We're doing Harvey. She's mm-hmm. doing Mrs. Chauvinet. I'm doing Elwood down in Florida, in Jacksonville.
Wow.
Is the sort of capper to the summer. That goes through September 8th. And then finally, I stop. I go home for a bit.
A little rest. A brief little rest. Now, the reason you're here today and not 3 weeks ago is because normally, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we do our show on Sunday night and most frequently tape it earlier, but it's on Sunday night. The show opens for previews on Wednesday and Thursday, and then opening night on Friday. Now, that week before the show, when most people are hard at work rehearsing, you weren't even in the state.
I was in New Jersey. I was actually we were finishing up Ever After, which is a new musical based on the Drew Barrymore movie. That's finally come to the stage. It opened at the Paper Mill Playhouse in New Jersey as a sort of give it air, put it in front of an audience. I think there was obviously some interest in taking it to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that happens or not, we'll see. But it sort of happened to run right slap into the beginnings of this one. But because I've done it a couple of times, and with the miracles of modern technology, I was able to rehearse in New York a few times with the principals that came to New York. We sort of met in the middle and did four or five intense rehearsals for those scenes and really had a very beneficial, useful, and productive and full rehearsal period. I felt like when we
Probably very focused.
And everyone came prepared. Everyone came with their A game. And then I was able to watch the final rehearsals on Skype. I sat in my little place in New Jersey and watched the designer run through, saw where all the choreography was, saw all the staging, saw where I would fit in. So then when I arrived at Theatre by the Sea on the Monday night, went straight into tech, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday we opened.
Yeah, there you go.
And we did our first preview.
He makes it sound
Actually, Wednesday, I think we had the first preview.
Right. You make it sound so easy, but he worked, I'm not lying, he worked very, very hard. I remember, I didn't know you were doing the Skype thing, so I'm at the DR, the designer run-through. I look in the back of the room when we took our break, and I said, that looks like Charles on the little TV screen about this big, little laptop thing. That looks like Charles. And I went over and I'm kind of, you remember this? I'm looking at you like this, and all of a sudden he goes, sideways, you know?
Now, Bill, when this first, when you first found out about this, because this has been planned for a long time, you asked Charles to do a, you know, a long time ago, and then all of a sudden the other show came in. How did you take that
phone
call?
I got that call. Tom Center called me in the morning, and he goes, I got some bad news. I go, what is it? He told me the story, and I said, and for some reason he told me the date, and I said, wait a minute, we open on a, which this is the craziest part. This is all in 1 hour conversation in the morning. I said, Tom, I said, see if Charlie would even consider, he knows the show, I know it's been a few years, he's a smart guy, he'll know the lines, he'll get the block and all that, but see if he'll even consider doing this crazy idea. Well, about an hour later, he said, I'm on board, let's talk about crazy ideas. I said, I love the fact that he would even have considered it, and at the end of the day did it, but it was a lot of work, as you can imagine. He's doing 8 shows
at
the other theater and then doing New York for our thing, and then
I love crazy ideas. I mean, that's part of the business. I mean, that's what excites me about theater more than anything.
Keeps it fresh. I mean,
keeps it fresh, keeps you young. I got a call a couple of years ago from a friend of mine who has a theater in Kansas, and he said, listen, this sounds crazy. I don't know that you'll even consider it. We've just had the dress rehearsal. We're doing Harvey. We just had the dress rehearsal, and we've lost the star, basically. Long story short, they've gone. Can you get on a plane? Can you read the script? Can you learn it during the plane trip and open in 3 days' time doing Harvey? So I set out to Kansas and rehearsed it with the stage manager for 2 days and went on as Elwood, you know.
There you go.
So,
you know, I have to interrupt you. You're just lucky that you didn't get a call from Bill last year to play Annie.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
That's the next one.
Yeah,
but you know, it's like it's like the crazier the better. It's like if it's not going to kill you, lean into it and learn and keep young. You know, challenge yourself. So, it suddenly seemed like let's do this. You know, why not? And it's turned out to be fantastic.
Absolutely. You know? Now that's also a tribute to the cast that's around you.
Absolutely.
And those people being able to work that way and
right.
Giving some behind-the-scenes scoop here on Conducting Conversation. You had like a stand-in here.
Right.
JP.
JP was a stand-in for you.
Absolutely. Invaluable. I mean, it was Bill set it up so that this was the only way it could work, and he set it up, you know, giving us every card in our hands to play. Mm-hmm. You know, it's up to you to play the cards, but he gave us the best cards we could have. And, you know, JP was invaluable, not a very thankful task, but he did a fantastic job of literally being me in those rehearsals. And as I say, the cast was so good and so on their game that we would hit the ground running. In fact, we kind of finished in New York. We did our last rehearsal in New York, and I remember we kind of looked at each other and went, do we want to do this again? Is there anything we want to do anymore? I think we've done it. And we said, no, we kind of done it. We've got it. We've got what we need now to go to Rhode Island. We're ready. So, which I was pleasantly surprised at how quickly we got that done and how you really can't see it. I mean, the show works as if we'd been running and rehearsing.
Well, you
it
saw
for
it.
Absolutely.
Months.
Opening night, it was.
Yeah, I kind of wish we'd had 24 hours before that opening night. You know, I would have liked it to have been the Saturday night. But anyway, it was.
Well,
it,
we got because, it we and got the main it thing is, not because of the actors, because now you're moving all the set pieces and all the stuff that have to work.
Right.
And he's not
all
wrong. That extra 24
stuff,
hours
right.
does help.
Yeah,
that
the technical stuff is amazing. And when you see the way that all flows, and you manage to stay out of the way of, you know, things coming and going. And
yeah.
The trick.
Yeah, dodging. And in fact, I actually, there was one bit where Freddie is sitting on the stoop singing A Street Where You Live.
Right.
And I'm actually helping to hold the curtain back for him to come off because I'm making an entrance right after. So I'm like holding the curtain so the stagehands can get that off. And then I drop the curtain, then I go on.
And real quick, last week we had an episode where the area lost half of the power at about 7:15 for an 8 o'clock curtain, and I was out in Wesley doing some shopping over, and I ran back and I said, because I have the editors, the show must go on. You know,
right.
We've had our
absolutely,
stories, Mike.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, I first talked to Charlie and stage manager, and I said, can we pull this off? And we ended up, I'm not going to give this whole story. We ended up pulling off the first act without mics on the actors, with the orchestra no miking. We found a plug for the piano, the electric keyboard. We put most of the orchestra in the audience. Everybody stayed for the show. It was terrific. At the break, the power had already gotten fixed. We put it back in their mics, and the second act went on the way it was supposed to be.
Oh, is it like the old days? And we had stage managers doing the sound effects because we had the sound effects.
Sound effects.
So we had stage managers doing the chimes of the bell and the horse race, where you know you have the horses in Ascot going around the track.
Around,
we had the guys on the spot sort of scratching the walls of the theater around the theater, so that it's like there's the sound. It was just fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. It was like
sure
really was. The show must go on.
The show must go on. One time was doing a show. We talked a little bit earlier about Canada, and I was up in Canada doing a show with my quartet, and the power went out, and believe it or not, everybody went out in their vehicles during intermission, brought in flashlights, and shined them on the stage.
I'll have to keep that one in mind, by flashlight.
And it becomes a more magical night than any other.
Now, I mentioned that with my quartet, one time I did a national tour. I was 6 months on the road doing Music Man. And I found myself in the position of being the bass in the quartet, and I was the only person that didn't have an understudy. And so I had to make sure that I was ready for all of those shows, and I managed to, knock on wood, I made it through. Now, I can imagine the pressure on you. Nobody wants to arrive at Theater by the Sea and see the program, and then you decide, by not feeling great.
Right. Well, it's funny you said that is the sort of terror. And it's funny you should say, because I actually just went to check on a voice issue I've been having, and it's apparently acid. I tend to, a lot of performers, and you probably had this. I didn't realize it. The doctor was telling me, because we use our diaphragms, he said singers, actors, and public speakers, because they use their diaphragm, they'll squeeze those stomach juices up into your esophagus, and it can irritate your throat. So, you know, a simple Zantac will do the trick. So thank goodness I went to see him, and I've got this, you know, information. So now when I get this scratchy throat, I know that's what it's about.
Right.
Because that's the terror in a situation like this. You know, you'd have to be sort of semi-conscious to not go on. You just have to push through. And you, as you know, Dr. Theater takes care of it. I mean, you can be feeling pretty bad, but when you walk on that stage, suddenly the adrenaline takes over.
You find that 2 hours, and you're fine, and then you die later.
Exactly. It's kind of true. And I figured we've just got the 2 weeks, so it should be fine. I'm not planning on missing any.
Well, that'll be great. That'll be a good thing. And, speaking about not missing any, Bill, when you're casting something like this, do you ever consider that could happen? I mean, you know, the Annie situation is kind of a joke to us. Now we can laugh now a year later, but it wasn't funny at the time when you went through one Annie after the other.
Four Annies.
do you plan? Do you ever think about that? Or do you say,
I got to tell you, when you have such a short rehearsal period and sometimes a short run, especially at North Shore, it's only a two-week run, you we didn't used to do it. Now we say it's between Annie and George from Lacaj there.
Right. And we had that. And Kaj, I missed one night at the end of Kaj. Yep. I had to, there was a bug going around and I got the bug.
Yeah.
And, but we had this fantastic guy covering my part, Al Bedonis. He was fantastic. And it was great. You know, he had an opportunity to go and do what he had been rehearsing to do, which was nice.
Right.
But it does happen, you know, unforeseen circumstances.
Human beings.
It can happen.
And when you're in a company, if a bug starts up, you know, because you're all so close to each other and you're sort of sharing a mug here or, you know, on stage, you might
right up close,
it can wreak havoc, yeah.
I want to ask one other personal story. This sounds like a play. It should be a play called Death of a Cousin instead of Death of a Salesman. But on your website, it says, in 2007, something happened to you through the death of a cousin.
Death of a cousin. Long story short, my great-grandfather, Irish, a son of an Irish immigrant, worked on the railroads in Milwaukee, moved up to Canada to work on the CPR, and ended up being the president of the Canadian Pacific Railroad. And in 1916, put the whole operation at the disposal of the Crown during the First World War, and as a result, was made a lord. He was given a baronessy, first Baron Shaughnessy. And that title went through the Canadian side, and about 8 years ago, ran out of the Canadian cousins, male Canadian cousins, bounced over to the English side, and I woke up one morning as 5th Baron Shaughnessy. So I am actually Lord Shaughnessy. My wife Susan is Lady Shaughnessy, and the best of all, my two kids are the Honorable Jenny and Madeline Shaughnessy, which they're like all over that. There's unfortunately no castle, no family fortune. There's not even a band of loyal retainers. I thought at least I'd have like 5 or 6 loyal retainers with a little S on their shirt fronts, you know, who would throw themselves in front of arrows meant for me. But no, none of that. Just a rather moldy robe and the title. And I get to go to the next coronation. I think if I don't go to the coronation, I get taken to Tower Hill and have my head cut off. So I believe I have to go to that. And you know, the right to demand a curtsy. Or a bow.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so there you go. Yes, you have to back out of the room if I'm in it.
We might want to have the audience bow at the show bill.
Fun. Yeah, how
when he comes
fun.
Out with his curtain.
Right. Right. So I told Kerry she has to give me a little bob curtsy every evening before we go on.
Well, Charles, I want to thank you so much for making time in your very busy schedule to come in. I know we kind of worked around our normal situation, but it was great to have you here.
It's been a pleasure, Mike. Thank you.
And our audience, not only in southern New England, but worldwide, when they listen on the web, will appreciate this, I'm sure. And a lot of great stories, and I'm sure we could do 10 other shows.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, it's time to go. We'll play another song from the show when we go out or two. But just thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, great. Mike. It's been great, really.
And Bill, thank you for making this happen. And
my pleasure, as always.
We'll see you next week and continued great success.
Thank you. Remember
that coming up is Little Mermaid at Theater by the Sea, and then Young Frankenstein, or Frankenstein.
That's it.
Depending on how you say it. And get your tickets right away, because all the shows are
not
going
a sales
out.
Pitch. Really, people will be disappointed that they couldn't get.
Absolutely.
Especially My Fair Lady.
I know. Right now, My Fair Lady, you know, I know there's a couple seats here and there, but not many, so get online.
Always worth calling.
Call Vinny.
Call Vinny.
Call Vinny and tell him that Charles said to give him a
Charles seat. Sent you.
you won't get a discount, but all right, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you all next week on Conducting Conversations.
I've grown accustomed to her face. She almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune. She whistles night and noon. Her smiles, her frowns, her ups, her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in, I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again. And yet, I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice, accustomed to her face. Marry Freddy. What an infantile idea. What a heartless, wicked, brainless thing to do. But she'll regret it. Oh, she'll regret it. It's doomed before they even take the vow. I can see her now, Mrs. Freddy Ainsworth Hill, in a wretched little flat above a store. I can see her now, not a penny in the till, and a bill collector beating at the door. She'll try to teach the things I taught her, and end up selling flowers instead, begging for her bread and water, while her husband has his breakfast in bed. In a year or so, when she's prematurely grey and the blossom on her cheek has turned to chalk, she'll come home and lo, he'll have upped and run away with a social climbing heiress from New York. Poor Eliza, how simply frightful, how humiliating, how delightful. How poignant it will be on that inevitable night when she hammers on my door in tears and rags. Miserable and lonely, repentant and contrite, will I let her in or hurl her to the wolves? Show her kindness or the treatment she deserves? Will I take her back or throw the baggage out? But I'm a most forgiving man, the sort who never could, ever would, take a position and staunchly never budge. Just a most forgiving man. But I will never take her back. If she were crawling on her knees, let her promise to atone, let her shiver, let her moan, I will slam the door and let the hellcat freeze. Marry Freddy. But I'm so used to hear her say, good morning, every day. Her joys, her woes, her highs, her lows are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in. I'm very grateful she's a woman and so easy to forget. Rather like a habit one can always break. And yet, I've grown accustomed to the trace of something in the air, accustomed to her face.
I want to be a lady in a flower shop instead of selling flowers at the corner of Tottenham Court Road. But they said they won't take me unless I can talk more genteel. He said he could teach me. Well, here I am, ready to pay, not asking any favour. And he treats me as if I was dirt. I know what lessons cost and I'm ready to pay.
It's almost irresistible. She's so deliciously low. So horribly dirty.
I wash my face and hands before I come. I did.
Eliza? Where the devil are my slippers?
Whoa.
Conducting Conversations was brought to you by Roberts Musical Instruments, using music and the arts to keep your child educated, entertained, and having fun. Roberts Musical Instruments is your key to musical success. Call 823-5459. That's 823-5459.